From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the second day of October 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGP Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Channel Seeds, Matt Bennett will be along from the farmstead, I'm sure. He may actually be in the elevator there at Windsor, Illinois, with a little rainfall for the day. But we'll find that out a bit later in the program as we talk to him about the cash grain market and what's happening there on the farm. And we'll discuss the weather forecast. Speaking of rainfall, that with Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were up a penny and a half at $3.22¾. March at $3.35¾, up 1¾ in the May at $3.44¼, a penny and a half higher. July corn at $3.52, up 1¾. Next year's December, $3.70, up 2¼. November beans today, 7¾ higher, $9.24½. The settlement price, January at $9.33, up 8¢. March at $9.41½, 7¾ higher in the May at $9.49¼, up 7¼. July 9.55¾, up 7¼. And next year's November beans at 9.49½, up 7¼ for the day. Bean meal at 308.70, up 340. Bean oil at 32.67, a penny higher. Chicago wheat in the July contract for the soft red, up 4¼ cents at $5.13¼. From the livestock, nearby live cattle futures for the day, up a nickel at $162.52½. The October feeder cattle at 241.75, up 265 for the day, and lean hogs finished the October contract at $106.50 per 100 pounds. They finished $1.10 lower. December, by the way, was unchanged at $94.87½. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Let's check the outside markets at this hour. The energies are currently trading. The crude oil at 57.5 cents higher, $91.30 a barrel. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.63¼¢. That's a tenth of a cent, or a penny rather, higher for the day. And when we take a look at the gasoline on the RBOB price, $2.41½. That's 3¼¢ lower. Natural gas at 7 cents lower, $3.95¾¢. And ethanol futures are currently trading in nearby October, half a cent lower at $1.52¢. Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 15 points higher at $16,755 for the day. Gold at $1,215, down 25 cents. And the dollar index at 85.69 is down 0.381 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Showers and thunderstorms after 3. Mostly cloudy, a high of near 79 degrees. Winds at about 14 miles an hour, gusting to 17. It's already rained here, so we're in the midst of it. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms will continue. Those before 4 a.m. and then showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 4 a.m. as well. A low this evening of 59 degrees, a south wind at 11 miles an hour, gusting to 16. Chance of rainfall for the evening, 100%. And then tomorrow, another chance of thunderstorms and rainfall before 10 a.m., a slight chance after 1 in the afternoon. This, of course, is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Learned Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Learned Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. It's the second day of October. Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, is on the phone line. Dan, thanks for taking the time with us. I see that we've managed to finish the grains and the oil seeds for the day a little higher. I think that may have surprised me because they dropped back part of the way during the middle of the day, and there's some strength left in this marketplace. Why is that the case?
Well, I think most of this big crop talk of the last month or 6 weeks, I forget how long we've been talking about these big yields and this big crop. And then last night, FC Stone came out with a corn crop production number right up against 15 billion and a soybean production number at 4 billion. And the market wasn't able to go lower on that news. The shorts in the market weren't able to advance their position any. And I think that was a strong signal that a lot of this big crop, if not all of it, is already priced into the market as far as the futures go. And then all of a sudden, if you can't get her to go down, the shorts have to come in and cover. And that's what we've done. And then I think to kind of add a little help to that, the dollar began to break a little bit after it's had a string of strong higher closes. So my guess is mostly that the big crop talk is in. I think people that are carrying short positions have probably put on a few extra short positions. So everybody's probably carrying a bigger short position than they really should be carrying from a financial point of view. And all of a sudden, we start turning higher. And we'll have to see what tomorrow brings. But Informa Economics will be out, I think, at 10:30 with their October number. I'm not too sure if they'll give us just one or maybe two. They are ones that believe that acreages are lower. So I don't know if they'll give us a production number with lower acres or the acres unchanged. But at least last month, they were much more modest with their yield numbers than the FC Stone Group was. So we may have seen the biggest number of this string of crop reports. And if you don't see anything bigger, the shorts are going to have to cover under this environment.
This all works nicely into your timing for lows for corn. I think you have them somewhere in this time frame in early October, right?
Yeah, when you look at an average seasonal pattern, and, averages you can get lost in, but your average seasonal pattern on December corn futures tells you that this is to buy corn during the first few days of October. Soybeans, you could probably wait a little longer. The average pattern maybe goes on into next week a little bit before they put in a seasonal low. So it does fit in from the seasonal perspective that we put in early October lows and then have some form of at least recovery rally or stabilization. And then a lot of times once the bean crop's put away, the seasonality on beans continues to climb as you go on into the new year. December corn futures usually struggle when they go back into delivery around the first part of December, and many times then they come down and kind of test that early October low, if not maybe take it out. But that's what an average pattern would be like. And like I said, each year is different. We're getting off to a little slower start, but I think we've made some pretty good progress here over the past 5 or 6 days. I know a few guys got some rain overnight and probably got chased out this morning. Beans are probably got a little more strength than corn did today on the rain forecast, because rain does slow down soybean harvest. There's no doubt about that. And I think the maps are wet enough over the next several days that that might be coming in and Helping out the beans a little bit also.
If you haven't looked, the radar for this afternoon is plenty wet, and there is rainfall that's going to certainly hamper harvest across our part of the world, across a large part of Kansas and Missouri and Iowa as well. And I think it's supposed to continue to come for a bit over the next 24 or 48-hour period, so that'll probably certainly keep guys out of the bean field. They may get back into the cornfields fairly quickly, but that's a much easier task. When you look at the beans, is there more strength in that marketplace? Because, you know, while they have dropped below $10, they're in nines, they just don't seem like they really want to push all that far down.
No. We had a decent export sales number here today of 31 million bushels. It's maybe smaller than what we kind of grew accustomed to last year for a while. We had a lot of 50s and whatnot, but that's still a good number. And I just glanced at the charts, and one thing that really stands out at you, we're 4 weeks or 4 days through this week, and we came off of a big harvest week, a crop production report from a private firm that's as large as you're probably ever going to see, and November 14 beans are up 14.75 for the week. November 15 beans are up 18 for the week. December wheat is up 8.5 cents for the week. December oats is up 15.75 for the week. D's 14 corn is only down 3 cents, and D's 15 corn is up 1.5 cents. So we'll see what happens tomorrow, but with the rain in the forecast, it's doubtful that we'll see a lot of pre-hedging. And we may even be able to pull out a higher weekly close on corn before it's over with, before the week's out.
That would be something with a 14 billion bushel crop at a minimum, I would think, staring the U.S. farmer in the face at this point. A higher close in the midst of harvest, that would be a very good sign.
Well, one thing that we got to keep in mind is that we do have daily consumption of both corn and soybeans. The processors and the exporters and everybody that's an end user of corn, whether it's livestock feeders or whatnot, use so many bushels a day. And since we got off to a later than normal start, and things are going a little slower than average, you got to keep in mind that we're using, 30 to 40 million bushels of corn a day. And if harvest drags out a little bit, we might be able to get through this big crop harvest without the difficulty that many people are actually anticipating. The elevator crowd is, got some pretty good wide basis levels out there. I mean, they're basically telling the farmer to go someplace else with your grain, go, leave it in the field for a while, or, build a new bin, or, develop a pile or something, because some of these bids are, fairly ridiculous when you take into account the situation.
Yeah, so the whole nature may be the one that says, go ahead and go slow. We're going to make it slow. But we'll find that out over time. And I suppose that would be helpful, though producers won't be very happy that they have to sit on the sidelines and have to begin to think about mudding a crop out if that truly is what happens. I don't know. Any other thoughts for the day before I let you go?
Well, other than, like I said, there are exporters that are needing inventory, feedlots need inventory, processors need inventory, and it's not coming into town as quickly as what the trade had anticipated, and they could get a little nervous here in another week or two if it kind of slows down.
Hey, thanks so much, and I look forward to talking to you in about 25, 30 minutes for Commodity Week. That'll air tomorrow after this program at 2:36. I appreciate it, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker, of course, is with CGB Enterprises. He is in Mandeville, Louisiana, and joins us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for today's broadcast comes in part from the Friends of WILL and from Common Ground Food Co-op in downtown Urbana, with a deli featuring iced lattes made with fairly traded ingredients and local milk, and a salad bar filled with local and organic ingredients. More information is at commonground.coop.
Coming up next, we dig into the backyard archives. Lisa Braltz heads to Arthur, Illinois, and learns there's a lot more to pumpkin patches than prize-winning pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns.
This is Matt Condal, and he's about to tell you something I'm sure you didn't know.
What we have to realize is North America is the only place in the entire planet that has an orange pumpkin. So when we think of pumpkins, it immediately think of a harvestable jack-o'-lantern pumpkin. But that is not the case anywhere else in the world. Australia is blue, slate blue pumpkins. Japan is a dark, blackish pumpkin. France is a red pumpkin. South Africa is a flat white pumpkin, maybe a green pumpkin. You could go on and on and on, but no one else has this orange jack-o'-lantern pumpkin that we have.
I took a ride down Interstate 57 not long ago to investigate what was going on at the Great Pumpkin Patch in Arthur, Illinois. It's serious Amish country down there. Lots of laundry on the line and lots of horses and buggies. But it turns out it's also serious pumpkin country. The Condal family, who are not Amish, have been on their 200 acres in Arthur for six generations, since 1859, and have become legendary in downstate Illinois for their 63 acres and hundreds of varieties of pumpkins, gourds, and squash. Mac, who we just heard from a moment ago, is a hip young guy who wouldn't look out of place at an Avett Brothers show or a tech conference. When I say pumpkin farmer, a guy like him doesn't necessarily spring to mind. Turns out, he's a very degreed and extremely well-traveled expert on pumpkins, gourds, and squash, who, despite the fact he could have lived and worked just about anywhere on the planet, wanted to not just keep things going on the farm in Arthur, but to make them even better.
I was always, whether I was sitting in econ class or whatever, I was always, how does this translate to pumpkins in Arthur, Illinois? And that's what I wanted to do, create things on our family land and, offer that up to the world.
Even though most of central Illinois only pays close attention to the patch at harvest time, dirt to dessert is serious business on the farm year-round. Three missions, one family, Matt calls it. Mission number one is the seeds. Mac's brother, Kit, started an heirloom seed company years ago, and Mac picked things up where Kit left off. These rare and pure pumpkin and gourd seeds come from seeds Mac sends to growers all over the country who have the space to grow them out and protect them from cross-pollination with other varieties. Mission number two is that 63-acre pumpkin patch. There are four species of pumpkins and squash, but hundreds of varieties. Between May and mid-July, they plant out thousands of plants, many of them heirlooms, many of them plants that will yield jack-o'-lanterns and giant prize-winner pumpkins. Their soil is healthy, Mac says, due to a three-year crop rotation system, and this year's drought has even been good for some of the varieties. Mission number three is the bakery, the dessert part of the equation. The young women in the bakery use ingredients off the farm whenever possible during the season, and those baked goods get out into the world via their own shop and some farmers' markets. The drought has lifted. Fall's dropping some pretty big hints lately. It feels good to get outside, get out of town a bit, breathe some fresh air.
When the football starts being thrown around and you get that first 45-degree night where you're like, ooh, jeans feels good, that's when it's pumpkin time, and we're certainly coming upon that now.
For Backyard Industry, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks to Lisa Braltz and to Dave Dickey for production of Backyard Industry. Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. While you're there, you can order your tickets for our November the 24th Farm Assets Conference. That's in Normal, Illinois. The program includes keynote presentations on land values, crop insurance, the ARC PLC decision, corn, soybeans, and the cash grain market. 12 of our regular analysts, 3 University of Illinois professors and specialists, and it's all just a $25 price tag away. Order your tickets right now online at willag.org or by dialing this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Farmers throughout the Corn Belt are expected to bring in their largest ever corn crop. You know that really well. The soybeans are likely to be a record setter, too. And while this sounds like really good news, that may not necessarily be the case. It has depressed prices with it, and farm incomes are likely to drop pretty dramatically. There's also already been a domino effect in rural America. I'll have more on the financial impact and how congressional inaction is tightening the economic squeeze. The combines are rolling full throttle across America's heartland. It is pretty likely, if the tax preparer and the farmer were paying attention, those machines were purchased under Section 179 of the United States Internal Revenue Code. This allows business owners of all types to deduct certain types of property as an expense. It's a big deal to farmers and to the places that sell farm equipment. Even more so right now, because Section 179 is not doing its job, and the equipment is piling up on dealership lots, says the president of Central Illinois Ag, Michael Schmidt.
We have a lot of inventory. A lot of the other dealers have a lot of inventory. $3 corn and $10 soybeans are not going to cut it today's production levels. Section 179 is going to be desperately needed to come back from the government for the bonus depreciation. Otherwise, I don't really see a whole lot of purchases being made between now and the end of this year.
The Section 179 tax savings has been slashed by some 95% because Congress has not acted to extend the larger amount, says farm business analyst at the University of Illinois, Bradley's Willing.
So right now they haven't done anything with it, so it, if we reverted back to what it was, to $25,000. So right now we're just waiting for Congress to act to pass that and move that up to what we have been in the past of $500,000 expense election.
Congress has used Section 179 as an economic stimulus tool. It appears legislators will now wait until after the November election to reauthorize the larger sum. However, there is a clause in the code that says the purchase must be put into service in the same year the deduction is used. December may be too late for that to happen on the farm. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Matt Bennett is not available for us to talk to this afternoon. A couple of items to keep in the back of your mind and one to put on your schedule for tomorrow morning because you're likely not to be in the field at that time, at least if you're in a large part of the Corn Belt. You can participate in a University of Illinois Farm Doc webinar that on decisions as they're related to the new farm programs. Jonathan Kappas and Gary Schnitke, along with Nick Paulson, will be there to talk about the ARC and PLC decisions. You need to pre-register for this one. You can do that easily enough. Go to the Farm Doc Daily website. That's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. And then look for the links to the webinar and you can get yourself all scheduled at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, Central Time. An hour-long webinar on the new farm programs. You've got some time, so may as well get yourself scheduled to take that webinar tomorrow and listen to it live. Or you can listen to last week's webinar there, too. It's already up and posted. This week's will be posted there a little bit later, but it's all available on the Farm Doc Daily website. If you want to do one tomorrow, you want to do it live, sign up right now at the Farm Doc Daily website, farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
This, of course, is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. The ice cream treat was likely invented in the summer of 1900 on the Lower East Side of New York City. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the first U.S. national income tax was passed to aid the Union War effort. In 1866, the first patent for a tin can with a key opener was issued in the U.S. In 1887, numerous websites give credit to Rowell Hodge for the patent of barbed wire. But history shows that Joseph Glidden is the father of modern barbed wire. The DeKalb, Illinois native attended a country fair where he witnessed a demonstration of a wooden rail with sharp nails protruding along its sides. It inspired Glidden to fashion barbs on an improvised coffee bean grinder, placing them on a smooth wire and then twisting another wire around the first to hold it in place. And in 1966, Richard Shoup died. an American pathologist. He was the first to identify an influenza virus and first to vaccinate animals against influenza. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Let's check the weather forecast with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Overnight here in Champaign-Urbana, we had 0.045 of an inch of rainfall. Can we expect more, do you suppose?
There's a lot more on the way over the next 24 to 36 hours. There's a large batch of rain that developed in the western Corn Belt overnight, and now that's moving into the central Corn Belt as we speak. That'll continue to develop and progress eastward all the way through tomorrow morning. We're looking for widespread 1 to 2 inch amounts pretty much along and east of the Mississippi River through tomorrow morning. So we're talking about a major rain event, and what that means for farmers is that we won't be able to continue with the rapid corn and soybean harvest pace. And we'll also see winter wheat planting slow, not only across the Corn Belt, but also further to the south across the Delta. So not the best forecast in terms of field work over the next 1 to 2 days and even into the weekend. But after that, it does dry out with no major rain events on the immediate horizon.
And it gets cold, I think, over that time frame, at least in parts of the Corn Belt.
Well, the entire Corn Belt is going to experience one of the more dramatic temperature changes we've seen since the spring. We're looking for temperatures that should easily drop 20 to 30 degrees over a one-day period. High temperatures on Friday and Saturday will struggle to hit 60 degrees in many areas, and we expect maximums to stay in the 40s across the northern third of the Corn Belt. So this is a major change, and probably the one thing we really need to focus on is just how cold temperatures will get at night, especially in northern areas of the Plains and Corn Belt. It looks like a real high probability for temperatures to fall below freezing and potentially several degrees below freezing. Minimums in the Dakotas should reach the mid-20s on Saturday morning, and that will officially end their corn and soybean growing season and also stunt development for any crops that are looking for more yield potential there. That'll affect North Dakota, South Dakota, and then adjacent areas of Minnesota and Nebraska. But after that, it does warm up again, and we don't look for any major freezes, but the temperature pattern is not looking quite as warm for the first half of next week, with most areas continuing to see temperatures that stay below normal. For Illinois and Indiana, temperatures will get chilly this weekend as well at night, but temperatures should generally stay in the low to mid-30s or even a bit warmer than that. You need to really get all the way down to 28 degrees and preferably a few degrees colder to end the growing season. So we look for conditions to generally continue to remain favorable, at least for development, over the next couple of weeks.
And finally, conditions in South America.
Well, it's interesting what's happening in South America. We don't have the best of growing seasons beginning, but it's also not one of the worst. Parts of South Brazil and Paraguay, which are significant corn and soybean producers, have been excessively wet over the last 30 days. Many areas there have received around 1.5 to 2.5 times its average rainfall, and that's very likely to limit corn and soybean planting over the next 5 to 7 days. Now, that being said, it does turn a lot drier from today forward, so conditions will begin to improve as we move on into next week. We really would like to see things stay dry in that part. Conversely, Argentina would also need to stay dry, but they have some significant rainfall coming up next week that should limit their corn and sunflower planting. And elsewhere in Brazil, no major problems, though some of the northern areas where corn is planted would definitely benefit from a wetter pattern, but it doesn't look too wet for the next 7 to 10 days.
Thanks for taking the time with us. That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.